One of the most controversial Netflix series of all time is 13 Reasons Why. When season 2 of the series was released just 2 weeks ago, our curious kids began binge-watching, just like they did last year with the release of season 1. Because of the show's controversial content and concerns about the influence on children and teens, 13 Reasons Why has been a hot topic for discussion and even disagreement among parents, counselors, teachers, youth workers, and media critics. Should we be watching 13 Reasons Why? Should we be letting our kids watch the show? What are the takeaways for parents and youth workers? How should we be talking with our kids about the show and its content? We'll be talking about 13 Reasons Why Season 2, these questions, and a whole lot more with a roundtable of friends who have watched on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, and today we're going to begin just a conversation between me and Chris Wagner. Jason's not with us. We're actually going to talk about the TV show second season of 13 Reasons Why, which came out a couple of weeks ago on Netflix. Jason's not here. I'd hoped he would be here, but he actually has one good reason why. He's not here.
He has a good reason?
Yeah, he has a good reason this time for not being here, and he's on vacation with his family. So we were not able to bring him in. I wish Jason would be here, but a little later on, we're going to actually bring in a small army of people to talk about 13 Reasons
Why. Yeah, it'll be our most number of guests we ever had at one time, I believe,
on an episode. So. It's going to be a technological nightmare, but we're going to make it happen. So, yeah.
We've got Kenton on speed dial just in case.
Yes, that's good. We'll bring Kenton back
into the fold.
Yeah, Kenton's actually going to come back into the office here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, he's going
to
help us with some
video recording. So that'll be good.
So, yeah. with 13 Reasons Why, one of the most, and this really happens anytime there's like a controversial media piece, maybe a movie, TV show, music. One of the most often questions that we get asked is, should I watch this? Is this something I should be paying attention to? Is this worth my time? So when it comes to 13 Reasons Why or other shows like that, how do you go about answering that question?
Yeah, and sometimes it's not just a matter of should I watch this because, you know, is it worth my time, but should I watch this because this might poison my mind?
Sure.
You know, there's always been concern about that, and that's a difficult balance, you know. So that's a good question, Chris, and we get asked that all the time. And really what lies behind the why of, you know, watching things like this and what we do here at CPYU is, you know, that process of cultural exegesis, listening to the culture to let the culture speak to us, to know what people are thinking, what are the beliefs that lie behind the behaviors, because until we know those, we can't really address them. We can't address them with truth. We can't address them with correctives. We can't address them in the case of things like 13 Reasons Why, you know, all the mental health issues that are brought up, we can't address them with the kind of help that we need to address them with. So we always go back to Paul in Acts 17 in Athens, where he walks into that city and the horizon, his eyesight, his field of vision is just filled with ugly, ugly things that are not of God. And certainly they don't resonate with Paul. They're repulsive to him, but it does not say that he ran. It says that he stayed and he looked carefully. And I think we need to look carefully. So John Stott, one of my favorite theologians of all time, I quote him constantly on this, you know, and said for Christians, our responsibility is to engage in the process of what he called dual listening. And what that means is we listen in two ways, dual. We listen first to God's word. We want to, as he said, discover even more the riches of Christ and go deeper in the truth. But we also listen to the world. That's the other side of it. And this is what Paul did in Athens. We listen to the world in order to know what people are thinking, why they're thinking what they're thinking, and how then to bring the light of God's word to bear on those realities that exist. So that's why we do that. Now, I just want to add a little bit there, because I've had some conversations with some youth workers over the last couple of weeks who, when I said online, hey, you know, watch 13 Reasons Why, especially if your kids are watching, I had some who said, I'm not going to do it. And it wasn't out of, you know, protest. It wasn't out of, you know, being belligerent. It was more out of, I can't watch this. I just, you know, so we
have to be aware of our own heart and things that, you know, we just shouldn't watch.
Yeah. And, you know, the line is different for everybody. That's not relativism. I'm just saying, you know, some of us have experiences. Some of us have personality bents that make it difficult for us to engage with certain things. And so I always say, don't go where you can't go. So we say, you know, immerse yourself into youth culture. And when we say that, we're going there to learn, to not be entertained, to learn.
Yep.
So that we can respond. It's a ministry strategy. But if you can't do it, don't, and let others go there for you. So I'm fully aware that there are people listening who we don't want to push them into that. But at the same time, I think we do need to be pushed if we're hesitant because we don't want to see what's happening. At the beginning of the summer, I just finished reading a book called Sticky Fingers. It's by Joe Hagan, and what it is, the subtitle is The Life and Times of Jan Wenner in Rolling Stone magazine. So it's a bio of Jan Wenner, and there's a story in here in the latter part of the book where it's talking about Wenner trying to get a movie launched about teenagers.
And because I wasn't aware until you told me, you might want to fill the audience into who Juan Winters is.
Oh, yeah. He's the editor of Rolling Stone, the founder and the editor of Rolling Stone magazine. So there's this part in here where Wenner was jockeying to get a film out in the early 80s on teenagers that would beat, you know, that cult film we know now, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, beat it to the punch. You know, there's a lot more of the backstory there. But when Wenner saw the film that was made for him, and it was a film that never really saw the light of day, it was never released. I don't even know what the title of it was, but Wenner said this when he saw it. He said, if this is the truth about American teenagers, I don't want to know it. Now, you're a dad. Hmm. You know, you've got three young kids. You've watched, as I did.
I did watch all yeah, you 13 watched, episodes.
You yep. watched season one,
correct.
And now you've watched season two. You know, what was your response when you watched?
As a parent, yeah, that's interesting. Now, on the one hand, it was extremely painful in some ways to watch.
And I would agree with that.
And in different ways than what season one was.
Yes.
Season one was difficult to watch because of the content and the issues that were raised. Season two felt a bit more forced and so it was difficult to watch for different reasons. But in terms of being a parent, because of studying youth culture here at CPYU, it wasn't as though there were issues that I wasn't aware of.
Right.
And my kids, my oldest is 10, certainly most of the realities that were portrayed in season two were not approaching yet, but we're certainly preparing for those realities, that the issues that are addressed, and there's tons of them, which we'll get into in a little bit, all the different issues we could talk about, the topics that come up in the show. But it was, you know, it does pain your heart to know that this, whether it's stretched truth or not, that these are some of the pains that are in line for what teenagers go through on a daily basis. And so having young kids, it certainly opens your heart to caring for teens that as they navigate these issues.
By the way, let me just interject there. That's important because I think a lot of times adults watch this stuff and they tend to get mad
yes.
at whoever made it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was tempted to do that
yeah.
at times for sure.
Yeah, so you get mad at whoever made it, and what gets lost in that is the fact that there are windows into the world and nuggets of truth that really are about the experience of teenagers today. And if all we're doing is getting mad at the people who made it, we may lose the opportunity to have a heart for those who are experiencing these things.
Yeah, and there are times where, because these are fictional characters being portrayed, that, you know, characters that maybe you should you know, feel sympathy or empathy for. It was hard to do so, but it, you know, but these are fictional characters because of the choices they make, right?
Yeah.
But then you have to realize, well, there are teenagers that have made similar choices, real life teenagers, not fictional characters, that have made similar choices and are dealing with similar things, and we do have to have a heart for them as opposed to just condemning that behavior and just being upset at their choices. And so that's an important thing to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah.
And it certainly, as a parent of a young daughter, man, with the issues regarding, you know, the sexual abuse and the rape culture and the
entitlement that's there,
yeah,
the hypersexualization.
That certainly, you know, makes you want to double down as a dad on teaching both my boys how to properly treat women, and then of course, you know, what in the world can I do to protect my daughter from these things as she gets older?
Yeah, yeah. And there was I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later when we bring our guests on, but there were parts of that, and I just think when you think about sexuality and how it was portrayed in there, number one, you realize we live in a hypersexualized world. But there really are no borders and boundaries related to sexual behavior, practice, gender identity, and that sort of thing in the understanding of the culture. And that was portrayed there, except for sexual assault.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. And so what I would understand the scriptures to say about God's grand and glorious design for sexuality, that was not portrayed in the way 13 Reasons Why portrays healthy teen sexuality. We would be on totally different pages,
right,
on that. And so I think that is quite telling and is confusing as well, and it's certainly something we need to keep an eye on. If we're involved in dual listening, boy, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that.
And my last statement, you know, coming from the perspective of a parent is, and we've talked about this when we talked season one, this was pretty apparent as well. The parents in the show are pretty much clueless. They're pretty much absent. At one point, I think Clay's dad has a conversation with him and basically says, well, there's no consequences to anything. People don't pay for the things that they do anymore. I forget. I should have looked up the exact quote, but the parents are basically, even the parents that show up in the show now and then, it seems basically they're rewarding their child for poor decisions and poor behavior.
Yeah. Ignorant, no backbone. You know, Lisa and I kept looking at each other and going, we wouldn't have responded that way. I mean,
yeah.
The way that they remain calm. I mean, even the Bakers in their mm-hmm. divorce conversations,
yeah,
you know, there's just this kindness that you're thinking that's not real life when people hurt us and people do wrong.
Right.
But I think parents, like you said, were largely ignorant. Yeah.
So having a 10-year-old approaching those years where, you know, at least the cliche is that he's going to stop talking to me at some point.
Yeah.
You know, I want to make sure whatever I can do to keep those lines of communication open and I can remain active in their lives, you know, in all the ways possible. I don't want in any way to look back and say, yeah, man, I acted like those parents in 13 Reasons Why. I was aloof. I was not there. I don't in any way want that to be the truth.
Yeah.
So I know you recently blogged your first impressions. You kind of blogged about 13 Reasons Why after you did that whole binge-watching experience, which I can't imagine.
It was exhausting.
How many did you watch in one day?
I think I watched 10 episodes in one day.
Wow.
And, you know, three the day before, and then I just get up. That was last Tuesday, you know, and I got up. I said, all right, I'm going for it here. I got to get this done.
There are a couple of days I watched two or three episodes, you know, at in one day. But
yeah, it was exhausting. You know, by the end, I felt like my eyes, remember in a cartoon how your eyes spin? I felt that's what my eyes were like, yeah.
So why don't you share some of that stuff from your blog and some of
your... You know, and I want to explain this, that these were first impressions, and I often blog first impressions because I don't want to say, hey, I've got this all figured out, and here's the final word. I'm in process, and I think we all should be. You know, I try to live by that rule unless I know that the scriptures are clear on something and I've thought through it. You know, I will often kind of soften things and just say, hey, this is not a complete thought, but here's where I am. So these were some of the things, and we'll talk through some of this later on when the guests come on. But okay, so I'll give them to you real quickly. First thing, you know, I thought that they should have put this thing to rest last year. I like you, you know, I'm watching. But then a couple episodes in, and I kept wondering, is this going to grab me, or is this going to be – it was painful to watch no matter what.
Yeah.
But is this going to be tedious to watch? You know, and it after a few episodes, it pulled me back in, but there was a lot of pain. And I think that there were reasons why it was important for me to continue to watch, which we'll talk about later. The second thing was that – and I can't emphasize this enough, and I wrote this in a blog – that the content warnings that they've added, and by the way, the release of this was held back due to protests. You know, that it would have come out sooner, but it was held back.
So they could prepare some of these
right. They put
resources.
They a bunch of resources. So before and after, but before, you know, there are these content warnings. They are warranted. I'm just going to say they are warranted. And just like season one, it's that last episode. All of the episodes, I think, are graphic.
Yes.
But when you get to episode 13 in both season one and season two, you are, quote unquote, treated to.
If I'm not mistaken, it might have been season or episode 12 of season two that you might be referring to as the more graphic of them. But
actually, it was the last one in the
right.
bathroom scene.
I thought that was episode 12.
Yeah, no, I think that was season. I do think that that. Oh, no, you're. No, it was season. It was episode 13. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll correct. We'll see here and
towards
you know,
the end of the season.
Break. Yeah, we'll
Sorry,
see.
Folks.
But it was where the most graphic one, because remember he came back with a gun to the dance. So, but that was just brutal. See, we're arguing over what we saw. This
yeah,
is
there
the
we
differing
go.
Interpretations. So, I think those are. And here's the thing. Several times I put myself in the place as I'm watching of a middle schooler and a high schooler who are binge watching the show at the same time, and I'm wondering how in the world. Mm. Can they process this? What is it doing to them? Third thing I walked away with was with this question. You know, like I kept asking, is this really what life is like for teenagers today? And we're going to talk about that. I don't know that I can really answer that question with intelligence and accuracy, and I don't know if I should. I think it was overstated. That is my general impression. However, if a student comes to you and says, yeah, this is my reality, you don't write it off and say, oh, you're overstating this. No, if it's their perceived reality, now we know we've got to step in and say, like, well, specifically what and how can we help you?
And I think you mentioned we've talked about this in conversation, too. Even if the issues that they're dealing with are real life issues teenagers are facing, the teenagers in the show were handling them in ways I'm not sure that real students their age would have the I'm not saying they handle them in mature ways, but I don't think that students have the maturity to handle them in some of the ways that they were handled on the show. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think as adults we'd have difficulty handling things in that way, and I see that, you know. I'll tell you, you know, you alluded to this before, but I think a general statement is that in this show, and in Series 2 especially, and it happened in Series 1, Year 1, season one, is that I wrote this down. I kept a journal as I was watching this. Adults are dumbed down.
Yeah.
Which is typical in, you know, shows that are targeting teenagers. They make the adults look stupid. And I wrote this, kids are smarted up.
That's true.
I think, you know, way beyond that. So, but I will say this. One thing is undeniable, that these are, whether they were stated accurately or not in terms of the intensity and how widespread they are, the way they work themselves out in individual kids' life, it did depict real issues, you know, things like depression, anxiety, suicide, family breakdown, narcissism, bullying, substance abuse, hypersexuality, privilege, entitlement, the quest for justice or injustice. Those are all there for sure. I also would say this, and this is really important, and I just alluded to this. I think we need to keep from jumping to conclusions about the influence 13 Reasons Why season 2 is having on kids, because, and here's why, no two viewers will watch it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think we need to know our kids and ask them, you know, what did you think about that? If they watched it, was there something that spoke to you? Was there something that represents you? How did this represent or not represent you? Or even talk about their friends, you know, is this is what it's like in real world? So, you know, we always say culture is a map and a mirror. It's reflective and directive. Another way of saying that is it's both descriptive and prescriptive. So for some kids who are experiencing these things, they would say, yeah, that's me. So that's where we step in and we say, well, let me watch with you and you explain to me what's happening. I think for many, many more kids who are just curious about how to live my life and trying to figure out, you know, worldview, trying to figure out identity, I think that it's prescriptive in that it says to them, this is the way life's supposed to be. This is how you're to act and how you're to think.
And so in that regard, we've got a lot of homework to do to teach kids, point them in the correct direction.
Yeah, we're going to get to that at the end today. I've got some notes I want to share, you know, that I jotted on that when we finish up. So I think that's important. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, instead of asking the question, should I watch, maybe we go to the kids that we know and say, have you watched?
Yeah.
And if we find out that they have, then we need to watch. And I think even for kids who haven't watched, they're swimming in a youth culture soup where they're with peers who have watched.
Sure.
And as a result, the influence, it may not be direct, but it will be indirect.
Mm-hmm.
And I even think if we want to have that, we often talk here about the prophetic, preventive, and redemptive influence we need to have to cultural realities. The prophetic is speaking the truths of God's word. The preventive is keeping kids from going down these roads. The redemptive is what do we do? How do we minister to them when they have gone down these roads? And I think to know what's down the road as a youth worker before kids get on that road or get so far down the road that they're involved in this, we need to know what's down the road so we can offer the prophetic from the scriptures and the preventive, you know, in terms of action steps we can take to intervene in the lives of kids to prevent, you know, harm and preserve their spiritual well-being, their physical and emotional well-being. I think we do need to watch for that reason. So, yeah, those are, you know, just some initial thoughts that I had. And what we're going to do, Chris, is bring a wide variety of folks in. We've got our largest podcast ever, you know, so we're going to bring them in after the break.
There's no way we'll get to every topic and issue covered in the whole season, but we want to hear from the different perspectives.
It's the start of a conversation, and we're hoping youth workers and parents, you'll stick with us and listen in because these are important matters to talk about, and we're going to talk to some of your peers, and they've all watched it. We've required them all to watch it. They've all watched season one and season two, and we want to hear their thoughts and then work through some responses and how we can redeem this thing that is, in fact, so very troubling. So stay with us. We're excited to announce that one of our most popular CPYU resources of all time has just been released in an updated and revised format. Tens of thousands of kids have been trained by their parents and youth workers to think Christianly about music and media with our How to Use Your Head to Guard Your Heart 3D Guide to Making Wise Media Choices. This easy-to-use teaching tool needs to be in your youth ministry toolbox if you desire to teach your students to integrate their faith into all of life. Jesus calls us to follow Him, and that includes following Him into the 6 to 9 hours a day of screen time that shape and mold the beliefs and behaviors of our kids. To learn more about our 3D Media Evaluation Guide and to order a copy for every member of your youth group, go to our website at cpyu.org. Teach your kids to engage with media to the glory of God. Well, welcome back, everybody, to Youth Culture Matters. This is our most populated podcast ever. We actually are sitting here in the studio. We have one guest here. And then we have 1, 2, 3, 4 joining us virtually. So we see all these faces, and it's a miracle we're getting the technology to work. But we wanted to bring in a group of people who have all viewed 13 Reasons Why, the first season and the second season, to get some thoughts, to talk about strategies, to try to figure out, you know, are kids watching? Aren't they watching? What are some of the issues this raises? And so we're going to have a bit of a roundtable discussion here. So let me just very quickly tell you who's here. And Julie Lowe is back. Thanks, Julie, for coming on. Julie has been on the podcast a few times. Julie is a counselor at Christian Counseling and Education Foundation outside of Philadelphia. Julie has worked with teenagers, worked with families, worked with children. And she actually has watched all this. She has blogged on it, not only this year, but last year. And it's just wonderful to have her here because she deals with these issues. So I'm sure everyone will have some questions about how to respond. And so we're blessed to have Julie here with us. We've got a mom JJ Landis is here. She lives in Lancaster, and she is a mother of three, high school down to
middle school.
And they're all in a local school district here. Just as an aside, the reason we're able to have this podcast is because her husband, Lee, has a company called Flagstream Technologies, and they're our go-to tech people here. So they've not only set us up, but they've rescued me on the road many times. Early on a Saturday morning when something's not working, they log on remotely, and they're helpful. So, JJ, thanks for being a part of this. And then we have three youth workers. And Susie Brahms, who's been on before, is involved with us here at CPYU. Susie's out in Pittsburgh, and she was at Memorial Park Presbyterian Church for years as a youth worker there, working with her husband, Bobby. And Susie and Bobby are parents of younger children. Bobby's on staff at Northway Church in the Pittsburgh area, Wexford area. So they're with a large group of students. Jeremy Michalak is – Jeremy, you're in Philly, right?
It's in Yardley, about 40 minutes north of Philly.
Yeah, so you're in beautiful Bucks County there. And what church are you at?
It's called Riverstone Church.
Okay. And Jeremy has a great story because as a youth worker, he comes from a family of youth workers. His dad, Matt, who I've known for years, teaches youth ministry at Cairn University outside of Philadelphia. And Matt's two brothers are in youth ministry as well. So that's really a neat story. And then Ben Birdsong is one of our doctoral students at Gordon-Conwell, studying with me and Duffy and Adonis. And Ben's in Birmingham, Alabama. And you're at a Baptist church, Ben. What's the name of your church?
I'm at Meadowbrook Baptist Church in Birmingham.
Okay, and I'm drawing a blank on that. But you're working with high schoolers and middle schoolers, correct?
Doing high school, middle school, and college.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of have the whole gamut.
Yep, okay. And then, Jeremy, you're doing the whole spectrum as well, or?
Yes, students from 7th grade to 12th grade, and then I also oversee the young adults group.
Okay. And Susie, your work was primarily with that age group as well, high school and middle school, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, good. So I want to start with the youth workers, and I just want to know what kind of, you know, splash and impact season 2 of 13 Reasons Why has had with them. What are you hearing? Are they watching? Are they talking? If they're watching, are they talking about it? What's your sense of what's happening? Let's start with you, Ben. And just talk about what you're doing.
Okay. I feel like for our students, the first season tended to have more of an impact than this season. There's a lot more conversation about it, especially tied into the topic of suicide. We had several suicides in our community that mimicked the first season. When we look at the second season, I know a couple of our high school students are watching it, but there tends to be less of a conversation going about it. I think partially they may be burned out on the whole series based on the intensity of the first one and where it was focused. But from conversations with the ones that I've had conversations with on it, they see the issues that are raised in the show as things that are happening in their school, but yet it's also dramatized on an extreme level that may be far beyond what they actually truly experience with some of the issues that are raised.
Do you find, just as a follow-up question, are you finding that they, when they respond to it, like you said, on an extreme level, is there like, that's not real, or they mock it a bit? You know, what's the posture they take when they push back on it as being extreme?
It seems to be it's not real.
Okay. But the issues are real. They're saying the issues are real.
The issues are real, right.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that Chris and I talked about on the front end, and I know you folks weren't on with us on that, was that it does seem a bit soap opera-ish and, you know, really intense. And we both agreed that it seems like the kids are, you know, they're smarted up while the adults are really dumbed down, which is pretty typical of shows that would target teenagers or children. You know, I mean, even cartoons do that. So, okay. Yeah, Susie, what about you? What are you folks hearing out there in the Pittsburgh area?
So right now, we don't have a lot of middle schoolers watching this series. I think their parents have wised up to the graphic nature of it for their age range. And so we do have high schoolers watching it. And their take is that it's pretty difficult to watch. It's serious. The topics are real and happening in high school. But for them, sometimes it's just a little too much for them to handle.
Yeah. Jeremy, what about you?
Yeah, I think I agree with Ben, where the first season, there was a lot of discussions and people were talking about it and a lot of people were watching it. Where this season, it almost seems like it's been a little bit too much to handle for some of them. And I have heard from some high school students that, you know, their first reaction to it was, these things are happening. Whether it's happening to them or, you know, people they're hearing about, but they know that there's stories like this that have happened that they portray in the show. And for them, it might not be reality, but they believe that these things, you know, truly are happening.
Hmm. JJ, as a parent, what are you, you know, with three kids, what are you hearing?
My high school daughter told me everyone is watching it. Everyone she knows is watching it. She's kind of burnt out on the, because of the first season. She's kind of moved on. I did ask her, or she did say teenagers are just as dramatic as the show, because it seems a little melodramatic to me. She said teenagers are just as dramatic, but the situations are a little over the top.
Yeah.
Obviously, because it's a TV show.
Yeah.
The real situations, but.
Yeah. So, Julie, you're a counselor, and you were talking a little bit before we began here about some of what you're hearing and seeing in terms of kids and their engagement with it. What are you encountering?
Yeah, I think it's certainly a buzz. Some of you have mentioned is it was the first season more of a buzz than the second. I think what's happening is it's not as big of a buzz, but it's being watched equally as much. But because it's the second season, it's maybe not out there as much, because every teen or family I'm talking to is either aware of it or has somebody watching it. We have a huge middle school population in this area who does watch it. And the public schools are actually putting notices out about this new season coming out, and they're warning parents. So that speaks to what they're seeing in the public high schools as well.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what you folks were feeling when you watched it, some of your reactions to it. You know, we asked about kids, but, you know, where does it get it right? Where is it getting it wrong in terms of the kinds of things? You know, our friend Chap Clark talks about the world beneath. And in this world beneath that teenagers live in, adults are by and large, you know, ignorant to it because it's this secret world. And there were actually, I found the narration in the show to be quite interesting from time to time. I kept a little journal and was writing things. And, you know, some of what I heard, I remember, I can't find it here where I wrote it down now, but at one point in the narration, it was stated by one of the students, you know, parents and teachers really have no clue what's going on in our world. But now that the curtain's been pulled back through 13 Reasons Why, and of course I know for all of you the curtain's been back because of your cares and concerns for kids and the work you do with them, you know, where does it get it right? Where does it get it wrong? What are some of the most pressing issues that you think youth workers and parents need to be aware of that the show raises? Anybody?
Yeah, I think to the students' perspective, that quote from the show, many of them believe that they can't trust adults, they can't trust parents, and if they do, they just won't understand. And some of the things that they're going through, they might really internalize to being just as important or life-changing as the things that are going on in the show. So those are things that I think I can see in our students, that, you know, they're skeptical to trust people that are teachers or parents or youth workers because they feel like they might be shamed or they're not going to understand.
Susie, you were going to chime in with something.
Yeah, I agree with what Jeremy said. I think there's a tendency to of parents to listen to their kid, but then not want to see it as serious as it might be. I know even for me with small kids, I want to minimize how they're feeling or their emotions or their anger or sadness, because sometimes it's scary as a parent to want to jump in to whatever they're dealing with. So I think I agree with Jeremy. I think they get afraid. Students are afraid to talk about it. Another thing that jumped out to me is just, again, the casual nature of sex in this series. that there, it's no big deal, that it's just here, there, wherever, with whoever. And I think that just, that's so true. I think that's so true to life of our students right now, and really concerning.
Yeah. I'll just say, so I watched it, and Chris and I have talked about this, that, you know, it seemed, you know, hypersexuality is a word that we use to describe what's happening in our culture. And there are no borders and boundaries. In fact, in the show, there were these spontaneous hookups, we'll call them, that were, you know, especially towards the end there at that last episode in the dance. I was just stunned by that. Just how casual and spontaneous that was. And there was no sense of, you know, this is crossing borders and boundaries. However, there was a strong sense throughout the show about sexual assault, which there should be, and the injustice of that. And even with the one of the last episodes, I think it was the last episode there at the beginning, with the kind of the Me Too rolling statements made by different characters in the show, about female characters, about who over the course of their life had violated them. You know, there was that. That's the border and the boundary. And certainly, you know, Bryce's character, who they're all trying to, you know, expose him and the errors and the immorality of his ways. You know, there's certainly borders and boundaries there. But and this is where I'm going to say, you know, Susie, thanks for raising that, because when we have to constantly be asking the question, so what? What does this mean for ministry? What does this mean for parenting? And that's where I want to go to Julie and go back to what Jeremy talked about with the trust issue. And, you know, when a child or a teen raises an issue and we minimize it and then they stop talking about, what are some ways that you counsel parents and youth workers to open the lines of communication, build trust?
When I go out and speak on these topics, I have this little mantra saying, talk often, talk freely, talk soon. Meaning we have to talk often and regularly about these topics. We have to talk freely, no matter how uncomfortable we are with these conversations, regardless of what it's about. You act like it's the most natural thing in the world to talk about. Why? Because I want to model to my kids, we're safe to talk about. Nothing surprises us. We can handle it. We're not ashamed and embarrassed. They don't need to be. So talk often, talk freely, talk soon. Talk sooner than later. That is far better for us to be proactive than reactive. That's what a lot of parents are. They hope their kids are in the dark until they find something out, and then they reactively engage with it. And it's far better to inform the way a child views a topic than it is to try to go back and debunk inaccurate ones. Mm.
Well, that's good. Julie, are you, and I'd ask this question of everybody, but let's start with Julie. Are you recommending then that parents watch this? And how do you frame that conversation? Because we've had a lot of questions about this from youth workers as we prepared to do this podcast. Folks asked this question.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. Usually I'm responding to, should kids watch it? And after seeing the second season, I without a doubt say no. I've got 6 kids of my own, 5 teenagers. It broke my heart watching it myself, thinking, I mean, it was offending my conscience left and right watching it. I can't imagine what it does to an impressionable kid, child, teen. Shouldn't a parent watch it? On one hand, it should bother us to watch that kind of stuff. On the other hand, I wonder, maybe parents should get a taste of the show so they understand that they are not minimizing what their kids are seeing and being exposed to. So I don't think they should watch it because they'll learn something redeeming about it.
Right.
But should they watch it because they need to understand what their kids are watching? And there are so many shows out there like this. So we're just talking one about of many that romanticize a teen culture that's really dangerous.
Yeah. JJ, how has it helped, and then we'll go to Ben, but how has it helped, you know, you as a parent? I know we're probably all, we all just watched it recently, right? So it's, I think we're all feeling like we were just in a car wreck and we're still sitting there pulling the glass out, waiting for the ambulance to arrive. So I understand these are initial thoughts and responses after some of the initial shock of watching it, but you know, without having a whole lot of time to think about it, I'll put you on the spot, you know.
Well, as far as your question, should parents watch it? I think some should. But I think some parents are so fearful that that might perpetuate the fear of the unrelatable teenagers, and that they're so far gone and so hopeless, the teen culture. And I think that's a mistake.
Yeah.
So those parents that are overwhelmed and fearful about kids these days, they might believe all the drama that they see and all the sophisticated relationships with the teens that I don't think, you know, I think the teens in that show are a little more sophisticated and mature.
Your kids were aware you watched it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what did they ask you, or did they approach you like with conversations like, what in the world are you? Because I know, like, when I go speak somewhere and the kids know that I'm speaking to the parents, the kids are always, I have this picture of them waiting at the door when their parents come home. And they say, what did that man tell you about us? You know, that kind of thing. I mean, how did they respond to it? Or did you have to spark conversation?
They all knew what I was doing because I had to ignore them for 2 days. they weren't that interested.
Yeah.
My youngest was interested just because of a podcast.
Yeah.
But I asked them some questions like, is this true? Is this how it is?
Yeah, and I think that's a healthy way to do it, you know, to do that. And, you know, one of the things I'll throw in right here is I know we learned this with our kids, and I've talked to other parents about it, is, you know, when you watch something like this, and like you said, JJ, your parent, you have a fear, oh, my goodness, is my kid doing this? You go to your kids, and probably, this is my thing, I don't communicate real well, like, you know, you just, like, burst in, ask, you know, is this something that's a part of your, have you done this? You know, that kind of, I've found, like, I've learned by trial and error, that to say, you know, they're depicting teenage life this way, how many of your peers, you know, what percentage of your peers would be involved in this? So throw it on, get them to talk about the peer group, not themselves. And I think sometimes if they say, well, you know, 90% of my peers are involved in this specific thing, then you have a sense of the pressure they're feeling being in that peer group when they perceive it to be such, even if the perception is way too high. But
and to jump in on what JJ said, too, I think it's important for parents who choose to watch, you know, so that they don't become overcome with despair. You have to watch with the strong knowledge and hope and sense of the gospel.
Yeah.
Like you have to realize that Christ can redeem all these nasty situations that arise. And you got to keep that foremost in your mind and think, OK, now how do I take the realities that are portrayed in the show and help my teenager realize the hope of the gospel, and how do I speak to those particular issues with that in mind? Because I think what JJ is saying, if you don't have that first and foremost in mind, because the show doesn't present much sense of hope.
No.
So you've got to have the hope of the gospel in mind, and how do I communicate that in the midst of these things that may or may not really be going on in teenagers' lives?
Yeah. Yeah. Ministry implications.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah, it does become completely overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben, you were going to say something.
And kind of feeding off what Chris was saying, you know, there's no gospel hope, but also this season, as differentiated from the first season, is all framed in light of even the warning at the beginning that, you know, if you need help, you can call these numbers and do these things. But even though it's raising all these questions that it's wanting to raise, there's no hopeful answers given. There's no real processing available yet, even though the show puts adults and leaders in people's lives as people to be questioned, they still try to push them towards help in that direction, which I don't know that help provides anything for them necessarily, but the show raises a lot of questions and leaves a lot of answers wanting. I was having a conversation with a youth pastor in town about the show, and one thing we were talking about that is done well is it processes through Clay's own grief of losing Hannah throughout the season. So you see a hopeful processing through grief, which is an actual dealing with an issue. But as a whole, it doesn't provide those hopeful answers. And that's where the gospel comes in. And, you know, as I kept watching different episodes, it's like there's no hope here. And it's sad that students would watch this show and turn off an episode and be like, there's no hope.
Yeah. I was thinking today, I was shuffling some papers around in my office, and I ran across a quote that I've used years ago, And it was Barbara Walters was interviewing Mikhail Gorbachev when he was, you know, head of the Soviet Union. And it was, you know, right when things were starting to open up a little bit. And she asked him, you know, what is your philosophy of life, having grown up in communism? And he thought for a minute and he said, my philosophy of life is this: people are born, people suffer, people die. And when I saw that, I thought, you know, that's kind of what that's the message. That's the worldview that this leaves people with, that this is all there is. And, you know, there is no hope. Of course, they leave you hanging at the end of the 13th episode. So they get you ready for season three. You know what's going to happen next. But based on what we've seen so far, you know, there's a track record of offering no hope. And this is where I think just the power of the gospel and those who are called to communicate it, parents first, youth workers, I know Julie and her counseling, you know, gospel-centered counseling. What have you as youth workers, have any of you yourself, or you've talked to people and said, okay, we need to, even thought about this, we need to strategize. So here's X number of issues, and I've got to address this in my youth group, whether kids have watched this or not, because this show has raised this issue for me. Have any of you had that happen, or even specific you know, with your whole group, or specific discussions with, you know, a limited number of students or a specific student who may be struggling?
Yeah, one thing that we did was, I'm really thankful because my father, and then I have two brothers that are all youth pastors, so something like this we can talk through. And
Jeremy, we lost you there. Susie or Ben, do you want to answer the question?
Susie, you go first and I'll take it.
Yeah, thanks. So we have addressed some of these specific issues in ministry, and specifically about 8 years ago, we lost a student to an overdose. So that was when we really realized, you know, we can't just have these one-on-one conversations as much. We need to address it as a group, and we need to address it to parents too, to take away the stigma of what is happening, the embarrassment, because I think a lot of what I saw in these two seasons is when we take away the embarrassment of what happens and what students are dealing with, then it lets you have that conversation again. It doesn't make them afraid. It doesn't make parents afraid. But you have to address it. You have to bring them up, because who's going to do it? It's going to be media. It's going to be their friends. And then there's no truth. There's no biblical truth spoken into those, unless we're coming alongside the families to do that.
Mm. I was called in by a parent of one of our students who had a friend who committed suicide in the last 6 months, kind of tied in with this show, and just was able to speak to those students about the importance of, you know, having a community, and the importance of processing with adults, and then the importance of having hope in Jesus. And I think, as you know, as these different scenarios arise, you know, we need to point them to those directions of other people and caring adults, that they still exist in the world and that there's hope in Christ.
Yeah. Jeremy, you had dropped off for a minute. Go ahead and do your answer again.
Sorry, I missed some of the conversation there. But one thing that I was going to say is, I'm blessed to have my father, and then two of my brothers are both youth pastors. So we can talk about some of these things and talk through how are we training our youth leaders to basically minister to our students and serve them best. And so one thing that we did was, when 13 Reasons Why, the first season, came out last year, we wanted to do something together. So my dad and I brought both of our youth groups together, and we talked about suicide and the issues of self-harm and depression. And then what we did was, Karen University has offered mental health first aid training for parents, for youth workers. And so we got on board with that and tried to equip our youth leaders to go to that class and be trained with how to help students and kind of go through assessing situations and best helping them to get the professional care that they need.
That's good. That's good. Well, I want to take a break. Before we do that, because when we come back, I want to talk more about faith and responses, and we're going to pick Julie's brain a little bit on some of these things. I'm just going to mention, you know, Ben talked about all these issues and no hope. And I don't want to overlook the fact that there were two times that I'm aware of that faith played into this, directly or indirectly, in this particular season, and they were both towards the latter way, and you know, the latter part of the series, the last episodes. One was when Hannah Baker's parents go to the church and the pastor to set up for the suicide. And whenever that, or the funeral, I mean, set up for the funeral from the suicide, and their interaction with the pastor. I don't know about you guys. I always cringe because I'm always wondering how is faith going to be portrayed. Who's, and there was a lot that was left unsaid, but I, you know, I cringed a little bit because I didn't think that was a great representation at all of what good ministry, gospel-centered ministry should be as you're ministering to people in the midst of grief. And I think, you know, there could have been a lot more truth communicated there. So that was one of them. But the other time, I don't know if you caught it, but at the beginning of that last episode where they had that series of, you know, Me Too, and they're mentioning all the people who they'd been violated by, one of the girls said, my youth pastor. And that's the only time somebody who was a youth pastor, you know, played into the thing, and it was someone who perpetrated, you know, a horrific act of sexual abuse. And we do know, I mean, a lot of us have talked about this, we do know that this is happening in our youth ministry world way too much, like it is everywhere else. But, you know, let's redeem that. Let's think about ways that we can respond that are more positive and that would be helpful and hopeful to kids. And that's what I want to talk about when we come back. So stick with us. We're having a conversation about 13 Reasons Why Season 2. In an effort to help you help the kids you know and love navigate their emerging sexuality to the glory of God, we've launched a sexual integrity initiative here at CPYU. Thanks to a generous grant from a company called DAS, you can access our Sexual Integrity Initiative and a growing number of resources for free by visiting the website at sexualintegrityinitiative.com. We're having a conversation with some friends who are parents and youth workers and counselors about the second season of 13 Reasons Why. And we want to turn the corner here and talk a little more about how to respond in some great ways. And here at CPYU, we always talk about when we see something happening in the culture, we mentioned a three-pronged approach, a prophetic, preventive, and redemptive. You know, the prophetic is speaking the truths of God's word to the realities that exist. The preventive is how do we equip kids, how do we walk beside them to keep them from going down roads that are destructive, you know, the wide road the scriptures talk about that does not lead to life, you know, the things that undermine human flourishing. And then the redemptive, once kids are involved in things, how do we show grace and offer help and lead them to restoration? You know, how do we play a role in God's redemptive purpose? And we want to talk about those things now because that's, you know, this is, it's like 13 Reasons Why is pulling back a curtain and exposing things and speaking for kids and speaking to kids, and I think it needs to speak to us as well. So JJ mentioned during the break, she had written down a couple of quotes. Why don't you read those? And then I want to ask Julie to respond.
Okay, so Mr. Porter was the school counselor, and when he was on the stand, at one point he said, not every kid who comes to you in pain can tell you where it hurts. And then there was another part where the teacher, I forget her name, but she said, kids don't know what help they need or how to ask for it. And also, before the very first episode, I thought this was really important. Before the very first episode, there was a disclaimer, and I think it was just on the screen. It said, the minute you start talking about it, it gets easier. So I just think all those, you know, we need to engage kids, but we don't always know how.
Yeah, and they don't know how to talk. So, Julie, right. What are some ways that we can sort of pop the lid on the barrel to get into conversations about these important matters?
Yeah, that makes me think of Proverbs 25, where it says, the purposes of a man's heart are like deep waters, but a man of understanding or insight draws them out. And that's what you're hitting on, that we need to be people of understanding that draw our kids out. They don't understand. Our kids are interpreters, they're meaning makers, but they don't make sense of life accurately without anything redemptive guidance or biblical worldview. And so that is where we need to bring to light and help them make sense out of life accurately, and being wise about it. And that's not going to happen if we don't draw our kids out. We don't build bridges with them and draw them out. And there are all kinds of creative ways to do that, all kinds of ways of getting kids to talk, but get them to talk. Show that you want to have more than fast food conversations that just get through the day and the busyness of life, but really, really engage them well.
What, with families, what are some of the ways that you would, you know, just off the top of your head, what are some of the skills you would encourage them to practice, you know, or to enact in the home, but parents, to get kids talking?
There are great resources out there. And again, we have six kids and we use these ourselves. We have to practice what we preach, but there are great things like Table Topics is a box of table topics that you can purchase on Amazon or lots of places. You know what? Our kids love, even our teenagers, especially our teenagers, love drawing the cards and asking creative questions, and everybody's going around the table talking about them. That's something where parents don't have to come up with it themselves. They're just learning to engage in deeper, meaningful conversations. So it's something as broad as that, to being as specific as, hey guys, you know, tell me how much are kids talking about sex and sexuality these days? How much are they talking about vaping these days? And my kids might not want to talk about what they're thinking and feeling, but I can always get them talking about what their friends are thinking and feeling. And it's opening the door to have conversations with them and to engage in that. And again, we model it. We model how comfortable it is. It would be rare for us to be around our dining room table and not to be having some kind of serious conversation. Or it could be my husband and I modeling it in front of our kids and talking about it, and them seeing, hey, we're not afraid to talk about these topics. It doesn't feel odd to us. So it all is about modeling it and then pointing back to truth and wisdom, and helping them feel comfortable having even different opinions than us. So even around our table, we'll play things like agree, disagree, and we'll throw out a statement. And it can be anywhere from the ridiculous about whether Batman's the greatest superhero in the world to who likes pizza more than Chinese food to is it safe to keep secrets? Is secrets good? Does abuse happen to your friends? And what you're doing is you're fostering relationship. And that's got to be key, that we're fostering relationship with young people, and then we're pointing them to a personal God who has relationship with them.
Yeah. And the takeaway from that is if we are not communicating before a crisis, if we're not communicating well before a crisis, we can't expect to communicate really at all in positive ways during a crisis. If our communication patterns are unhealthy or we haven't nurtured them. And just reading between the lines there, you said it. I mean, eating together, talking, putting the phones away, turning the television off, making conversation when it seems like there might not be anything else. There's always things to talk about, but prompt a conversation like that. So that's a great, great idea. And I would also say that, you know, what you're saying about feeding truth into kids' lives and wisdom and recalibrating their worldview, throwing, opening, again, pulling the curtain back on the biblical narrative to shed light on and expose the darkness and the lies of the cultural narrative. You've got to, as a parent and a youth worker, you have to know the biblical narrative. And there's nothing more important, no practice more important than nurturing your own soul and knowing the scriptures. So, you know, that's good. Thanks. What we've got Julie here. Ask questions on behalf of youth workers. You know, what are some of the questions you might have? Susie, Ben, Jeremy, you know, Chris, feel free to chime in. JJ, you know, what are some other questions you might have?
So I have a question. I think a scene that really impacted me as a parent and a youth worker was some of Tyler's last scenes in the episode where he's sitting at his desk when he returns to school and he's at home and his mom comes in and asks him, how was your day? And he blatantly lies to her, but he does it in a way that's so convincing. And I think that's scary as a parent to think that your child could have suffered the most unimaginable thing, yet come home and say, oh, it's totally fine. So what are some things we can look for as a parent and a youth worker to kind of see when they say it's okay, but maybe it's not really okay?
Yeah, that was a heartbreaking scene to endure, actually, beforehand and then after that. I think it goes deeper than just check-ins. And so what you saw is a mom having a check-in and a very convincing lie in response. But it means me going deeper as a parent to knowing who their friends are, what happens in their schools, their relationship. I mean, to some degree, our kids and the people that love us most can always deceive us, right? But we become experts at knowing our own kids. And that means an example I often give is one of my boys has this awesome caught look. And he's a teenager now, and he's had it since he was 4 or 5 years old. And he still hasn't figured it out, thank goodness. But I can almost instantly tell when he's not being 100% truthful. Not everybody has that. And some of my kids are better at being untruthful than others. But when you become an expert at knowing your own kids, you begin to pick up on the subtle and not so subtle cues. It also means that I'm investing more in relating to them, and it's not just a check-in. And I think, too, the more we get to know our kids' friends, the more we start to pick up on some of the subtleties or issues that might be out there. So there's no foolproof formula, but it does go back to this sense that if I understand the world my kids are swimming in and I'm willing to enter into that pool with them, then to some degree I'll always be a little bit wiser than the next.
That's good. Good question. Jeremy or Ben, you got anything you want to ask
the youth workers? I do have a question just regarding counseling and when you would recommend someone to go see a counselor, because we know that, you know, no heart can change without the work of God. But part of that process sometimes can be going to see Christian counseling and working through things with a family. And this might be a hard question to answer, but at what point, like, would you recommend a student to see a Christian counselor?
One way of answering that, there's probably dozens of ways to answer, but one way of answering it is when parents really feel at a loss. So part of my philosophy and background is, and belief is, as much as I work with kids and teens, I want to work with their parents, because I really believe they're long-term, they're wise counselor. My job is to work myself out of a job. So the more I build bridges with parents and kids and equip parents to be their child's wise counselor, the better off the whole family will be. So when parents are really feeling ill-equipped to know how to help their child, so a child can be struggling a great deal, but if the parents are invested, youth pastors are invested, mentors are invested, man, I'm excited, because that means I work myself out of a job. I'm only there to be an added support. But when those things are missing, someone like me becomes more of a necessity. When they're isolated, alone, they're not speaking to adults, they don't have a safe place to open up, that's when a counselor is more needed. So I look at it, what are the resources, the community around a child that they have to help them grow? And if that's lacking, I'm probably more important. And when a parent feels ill-equipped or lost in knowing what to do, I'm probably more needed in that moment.
Let's say as students are watching this, they realize that they go to Liberty High, but they're not a participant in any of the stuff that's going on. How, as a youth worker and from a counselor's perspective, can we encourage students to be the change in that situation, to be the people that are the light in the midst of the darkness, which is an element that's missing in the show, but how do we equip our students to be that?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing in the show is they try to make Clay that kind of hero in it. And in some ways, there's something admirable about it. And in some ways, there's something really scary about the way that he carries the weight of saving everybody in the midst of this. So he's in some ways a role model of to some kids. Where I think it runs amok is kids who see these things should be going to adults and enlightening the adults and involving adults. Rather than peers turning to peers for answers, we need to take back parental authority in the most godly of ways, where there's a disintegration in our culture of good, trusting authority, and we need to bring that back in. So if a teen is watching this going, man, that I know this stuff is happening in my school, a key that I'd encourage is to say, go to trusting adults and start being that change. Bring them into it. Let them do things that you can't possibly do. They can't be a Clay Jensen in their school, but they can point to people that should be helpful.
That's so good. Good.
Good.
Let me, oh, Susie, you want to say something?
Yeah, I do have another question. Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, but as youth workers are trained, and I know we've had this training in our churches, the idea of being a mandated reporter, can you kind of clarify where a youth worker has to fulfill those responsibilities?
Sure, and tell me if you're thinking specifically about something this show, but yeah, anytime abuse is happening, you're a mandated reporter. Anytime there's harm to self or others, you're a mandated reporter. So what gets tricky is when it's peer on peer, and the law says when it's 4 more year window gap, where that's different than the show, you know, those things are, the lines get really muddied, but that just reminds me of something you're asking. So you as youth group workers will know this better than me, but as you know, some of this is bringing this training to parents. And that's some of the best things youth leaders and churches can do, is making parents more aware and educating parents and helping their young people so it doesn't always fall on youth leaders or counselors. And you know, churches are doing a great job of bringing people in to do mandated reporter trainings as well. And what are the things that have to be reported? And how do we do more as believers than just report? We actually walk alongside people in a loving way. So those would be keys to just bringing training into the church for both parents and some of those what are mandated reporting trainings involved. You know, the other thing about the show that strikes me, they're bringing up all the topics we should be talking to kids about, but they're bringing up the corruption of them. So one of the things I say to my kids and people all the time is God creates, but the world corrupts. God creates sex, the world corrupts it. God creates food, the world corrupts it. God creates healthy, loving relationships, the world corrupts them. What the show does is it brings up all the corruption of these topics. What we need to bring back is the creation of them, the good, the wholesomeness of what they should be.
That's excellent. Well, let's turn the corner here, and just a couple things as we start to go down the home stretch. I don't want to promise that we're close to the end. You know how I do that, Chris, and then I never get there. So yeah. I'm going to watch
20 minutes later.
Yeah, 20 minutes later. Well, last thing I want to say, 20 minutes later. But I wrote down, as Julie talks about how the world corrupts, I wrote down some statements from the show, and there's probably half a dozen here, or some situations that work themselves out. This is nowhere near exhaustive, that I think are the kinds of things that when we watch it, we need to perk up and go, okay, I've got to answer that, you know, somehow. So here are a few. I'll just rattle them off very quickly. And youth workers, parents, I think we need this. This describes what's happening in our culture, and we need to work redemptively to turn this around. So episode 2. I think it was Hannah speaking from the grave, which she did the whole time. She asked this question in narration: what's the truth? We each have our own truth. So she answered the question. And I'm going to tell you, there's nothing that makes me cringe more, having spent 20 years studying the postmodern turn, than just saying, you know, what's the truth, as if it's not out there, then all of a sudden concluding we all have it within ourselves. And this is where I think, you know, we have to understand our brokenness and teach our kids a good theology of brokenness and depravity, and send them to the scriptures and to the gospel to see the truth, and allow the Holy Spirit to work as the Holy Spirit is promised to work through exposure to the truth, to God's word, and to change hearts. So again, I just think that's so indicative of you know, where we're thinking. And I'll just throw this in as a personal comment that's really frustrating me right now in our youth ministry world. This notion is not something that's happening out there. We're seeing it more and more in the church. We're seeing it more and more, this attitude in our youth ministry world, that everybody's got their own truth, just find your own truth. And we rewrite the scriptures, or just write them off, perhaps. Here's another one. Pardon me for the language here, but Tyler, when those guys made their T-shirts, remember? Their a-hole T-shirts. You know, that's actually quite telling, because when you understand extreme subcultures and kids who dress differently, it's been this way for decades, they're just looking for a place to belong. And that's a signal that, you know, I don't have a place. And we knew that about him in this, that, you know, I mean, he was one of the most tragic characters of all. I mean, I really was drawn to him probably more than anybody else. just because he seems like he has a soft heart and he's just so hungry for someone to connect with him and relate to him. And I think we need to look for those kids. What are the signals that they wear? What are the signals, you know, that you see stylistically in them where they're looking for a place to belong and are you know, just making the church that place, you know. The quest for justice. I think that was a good thing there. You know, that was a plot line that ran through the whole thing. And I think we have to define justice biblically. And I think we have to frame justice in the love of God that is not just, you know, this ooey-gooey love, but really the, you know, the holy love of God, as David Wells, the theologian, says. I think that that's just something we need to think about. Susie, I think you mentioned this, a hypersexualized world. What are we teaching our kids about God's good design for sexuality? And the goodness, as Julie says, you know, what God has created rather than how the world has corrupted it. We too often, you know, say no, 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 no to the corruption, which we need to do, but we don't get our kids to understand God's big yes to the created order for that. How about Ryan, another tragic character? And I don't know if you remember this, but there was this point where he was so lonely and looking for a hookup, and he was flipping through his phone. I think he was using Grindr, which is the same-sex hookup. It was an app. I don't know if it was the actual app or not, but you could see that there. And while he's doing that, he says this. He says, talking about Hannah, he says, what she needed most was love, human connection. And we're made for relationships and the need to relate. But don't stop there. Point kids to the truth. I'll just throw this in. The baseball coach, sports over character, that drove me crazy. And I think we need to talk about that. And then the last thing was Justin. And there's a theological truth here we need to push at when we talk about being adopted as God's children. When he was told, you know, Clay's parents wanted to adopt him. And his, remember his response? He said, why anyone would want to do that, I don't know. And in some way, you know, I think about that with my Heavenly Father, and I think we can talk about adoption. You know, Chap Clark has written his book about adoptive youth ministry that a bunch of us contributed to, and there's a way to connect with that. So, well, to end, I'm going to go back to Julie. And Julie, you blogged on all the reasons, you know, why they should live. And you actually put 13 of them up. It's on a blog. We're going to send people to it. But it reminded me of another line. Mrs. Baker, towards the end, said, there are always more reasons why not. And I think these are great reasons why. So I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you have them in front of you by chance? I have them. I can read them. I didn't ask you to do this. I'll on your blog.
Remember some, but I'd rather have you read them then.
Okay. All right. So what I want to advise you all to do is we'll include a link to Julie's blog, and you can find it at ccef.org. And she's actually put two blog entries up so far on 13 reasons why. This one went up after the first season. I know that was unfair to ask you that there, but what you did there was you actually have 13 reasons, all referenced with truths from the gospel, truths from the scriptures that are just so powerful. Even as an adult, you know, and a follower of Christ, I finally find these so helpful. So I'll just read them very quickly. One, you are not alone. I won't read the scriptures to go with it. I want people to go to that and see these, read these for themselves, and then share it. You are not alone. You have value. God cares about your tears. You can find help. Your life has purpose. There is a good way forward, even when life is hard. There's the hope. You are more than your outward appearance. Man, we have got to pound that home to our kids and even to adults, because the culture's giving us a different narrative. Tenth, you will not always feel this way. You know, the fact that there is a way out, and anyone who's struggled with depression knows that. You know, you just get buried in depression or circumstances, but you'll not always feel this way. You are greatly loved. You will not be put to shame, and God is up to good in your life. And this is how God redeems suffering. I'll just read you. You quote Genesis 50:20 and Romans 8:28. Joseph, here, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. That's to his brothers. And then Romans 8:28, we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So, parents and youth workers, you know, grab onto that. So here's what we'll do to end. Anybody have a last thing they want to say? I'm not going to make you all do it, but is there anything you want to leave listeners with?
I do. I love, Julie, that you said you won't always feel this way. And I think it's so hard for middle school and high school students to remember that. And they can't even emotionally deal with all these adult things that are happening to them. But to keep, you know, putting that truth, you won't always feel this way, that you can be, you're not alone in it. And I think those are so important to remember and to pray over our students, to pray over our children, those 13 things that you have written. So thank you for doing that.
Anybody else? Final word?
Just to JJ. Add on to those two, the character Sky said, in high school, everyone's watching you all the time. And I asked my teenage daughter about that, and she said, everybody thinks that everybody's watching them, but really everybody's just thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
And to teach these kids that it's not always like that, and to look outside of themselves.
Yeah. You know, I think if a lot of us had a chance to write, like as an adult, a letter to our 14-year-old self, that would be something we'd say. Because I remember walking down the hallway thinking everybody was looking at me. No way. You know, I mean, and we call that the imaginary audience. And that exists on social media as well. You think there's more people watching than or not, but that drives, you know, that's fear of man. And, you know, the scripture talks about that as well. So I'm going to ask, Julie, would you mention, because I did not think of this off the top of my head, but we talked in the last podcast we had with you about Ed Welch's book. There's a version of the book about fear of man that's been written for teenagers. Is it Why Don't You – what is that called?
I'm going to forget too. What Do You Think About Me and Why Do I Care?
Yeah, What Do You Think About Me and Why Do I Care? So we'll include a link to that. We'll include a link to Julie's blogs. We're going to put up a link to a little handout we have on signs of suicide and how to begin to respond. We'll have other resources on there. I know there's some folks who contacted me, youth workers who have said – that they had created discussion guides and things like that. We may include some of those. I haven't vetted those. We haven't vetted those, but we'll try to take a look at some of those. And the way to access all those things is to go to our cpyu.org page. As we always say, if you're listening to the podcast on a streaming platform that's not from our homepage, go to our homepage, and we have a list of everything that's mentioned, and we'll let you know more about resources that are helpful. So thank you to everybody. Jeremy, Susie, Ben, Julie, JJ, Chris, as always. Did I miss anybody there? We've got such a big roster here today. So thank you all. And for the rest of you, come back and join us again on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.